Exploration Films, the good, the true, and the beautiful.
Hello, and welcome to the Exploration Films podcast. I'm your host, Carl Muller. Here at Exploration Films, we offer discoveries, news, and history all through documentaries and feature films that bring out the best in people. Today, I'm excited to be joined by our guest, the award-winning director of numerous films, but the one we're going to talk about today is The Lamp, Tracy J. Trost. Tracy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Carl, man. I'm glad to be here, buddy.
Yeah, well, we at Exploration Films are just really excited to get a chance to talk with you a little bit, and I know that your film has been out, and it's on the Exploration Films catalog, and it's just been really great to see the response to that film over the last few years.
Oh, yeah, man, I'm so excited about it because The Lamp, filmed The Lamp in 2010. It was released in 2011. And I'm not lying when I say it's gotten more traction since it's joined the Exploration Films library than it has in any other distributor. And there's been several. It's funny because when Stephen Penn called me up and he said, hey, you know, we're interested in your films. You know, I get calls like that all the time. And most of the times I'm like, sure, yeah, let's do something. That'd be great. And, you know, you get that first residual check and it's like $75, right? Now, I'm not going to tell you how much Exploration has given me over the past few months, but it's substantially greater than that. Yes. And so anything I can do to draw attention to that, I'm happy to help out.
Well, we are really positive on the film. It's a timeless story. It is a story that transcends sort of location or anything like that. And it's really a heartwarming, inspiring tale. I don't want to give any of the plot away because obviously we're...
Yeah, we don't want to say they all die in the end, right?
Right, exactly. Well said.
Just read the movie.
Well said. Just read the movie. But it's... I was really pleased to see the heartwarming nature, the kind of connection with human stories that is so prevalent. Loss, breakup, reunion, and faith and hope. Yeah. How did you come across the story?
That's a good question. And there's a long story with it. I'll go with the shorter one.
This is a podcast. We can take as much time as we want here. You know.
Good. Okay. Well, the thing I like about what you just said there is stories that resonate, that cross culture, that cross age, you know, ethnicity are common stories. Love, you know, fear, faith, hope, triumph, you know, there's all different kinds of style of story. The thing I like about The Lamp is it's one of those stories that generally just about everybody can relate to, because the things that the characters in this movie relate or experience are things that in one way or another have happened to most everybody. Now, I mean, not everybody's lost a child, but you probably know of somebody who has experienced something like that, or you've read about it, or you've seen other movies about it. So the idea of loss and rebuilding isn't a non-familiar one to most people, right? Most audiences. The Lamp is one of those stories that takes you on a journey with our two characters, Stan and Lisa, and you get to experience the inside view of their life.
I'm sorry if I upset you, Stanley. I'm just trying to have a little conversation.
So you want to nag me now?
I'm not trying to nag you. I just wish that you would talk with me.
Talk. I'm all ears. Talk. Talk then. Just say something, anything.
I was just asking if you made any progress on your book. That's all.
Do you want me to clean the garage or do you want me to write the book? You know what? Never mind. Forget
Don't
about it. You
do
know
this
what I'm
again.
Gonna do is I'm going to go to the garage and I'm going to write my book there. Okay? You happy?
Nobody says, hey, I'm going to go see this movie because it's a story about somebody losing a child. And that is part of what it is. And it's a very small part of the story. But what is most important is you can see the journey that these people take. And quite honestly, the only difference from beginning to end in their lives and their story is what they believe and how they believe. And quite honestly, that's what's true for all of us. Yes. Our belief systems that we've built since we've been children, mm-hmm. things that we've been conditioned by how we've been raised, formulate who we are today. Mm-hmm. And what most people don't realize is by age 7, you've developed your belief systems. And sadly, that means that most of us are running around with the belief or the mentality of a 7-year-old. And I guess we all... Right? We've experienced that. But the truth is, based on the beliefs that you have in life, you determine your life and what your life is. And what Stan and Lisa learn in this film is that if they're willing to, and there's, you hear this key word, just believe, throughout the whole film, if they're willing to take on different beliefs, their lives can be exactly what they want it to be. And the thing that they eventually really learn is all the desires and all the dreams that they've had their whole lives were always available to them, but they weren't willing to believe it.
Interesting.
And through meeting Charles, our manager, played by Louis Gossett Jr., Academy Award-winning actor, he doesn't grant wishes per se, but what he does is give them the opportunity to realize that everything they could ever dream or hope for is there if they're willing to believe it's there.
I'm here because you requested me.
Requested you?
I believe the exact words were, I wish I could believe that it. Now, if you're so kind as to open the door, I will explain.
Yeah, I felt that was so powerful. The message of faith, just believe, it comes across so strongly in the film, and it's communicated in so many interesting ways through the...
It's metaphorical.
Yeah, through the metaphor of the lamb. Yeah. So maybe you could explain to some people who are listening right now the impact that faith or just believing has had in your life and your work.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, faith is the essence of life, if you think about it. People say there's fear, but I think fear is just faith pointed in the wrong direction.
Wow.
You know, fear is to be willing to believe the things that you don't want to have in your life are going to happen. And we find in life, faith is the result of the things that you focus on. And if your focus is on negative, you'll find that mostly negative things happen in your life. If you focus on positive, you know, you'll see that positivity comes. Now, faith is also another word for belief in God or in Christianity or something like that. And, you know, these movies definitely tie into biblical principles.
Yeah.
I've had people say these are Christian movies or they're not. They're truth stories, all my films. I personally believe that there's a source for truth, you know, and to me that would be in the Holy Scriptures. We all experience, it's like a law. I mean, gravity is a law. Whether I believe it's true or not, I'm affected by it every day. Faith is the same thing. Faith is a law, and what I put my attention to and what I point my focus on in life is where I will go in life.
Yeah, that's true.
In our story, in this one, their focus was on the devastation. Their focus was, you know, on the loss of a child, which is a devastating thing to anybody.
Mm.
But the belief at the time wasn't that they could survive it
personally
and their marriage.
I just thought we could put it to good use.
How could you do that?
Do what, Stanley? Get on with my life?
Don't start that with me again.
It's been 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years. You act like that's a long time.
It is.
How can you be so cold? He was your son, too.
You don't think I know that? You don't think I miss him every moment of every day?
Yeah, you wouldn't know by watching you. Carrying on like it never even happened.
Stanley, listen to me. It's time to move on.
You had no right. You can't just throw away his memory like that.
Right, and I remember the statistic. When we were writing the film, I looked it up, but I think it's in the high 80s. Marriages that suffer some sort of traumatic event, the loss of a child or something like that, usually I think it's up in the high 80s that they don't survive.
That's right.
And I'm not a psychologist by any means, but my belief is that the focus on hope is taken away.
Yeah.
And when you lose hope, I mean, if you come back to scripture, the Bible is very clear to say that without hope, people perish.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
And relationships perish.
That's
so
right.
Let me just say one thing to our listeners.
Yeah.
You can hear people talking in the background. I'm at an event. I spoke at an event yesterday talking about some of these things, about health, about faith, about neuroscience in our lives. So I apologize for the background.
Well, no apologies necessary. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute, I'm sure. But one thing that when you said that about what you focus on and fear is the belief in the faith misplaced. I think that's great. It's
for
a little
sure.
bit like driving a motorcycle.
I mean,
if you look at the ground, you're going to put the motorcycle down, right? If you look forward, you're going to make it around the turn. You're going to make it forward. That's one of the principles of life and driving a motorcycle.
Exactly. I'm a motorcycle driver as well.
I knew I liked you.
I actually just bought a new Harley. So,
oh, we could talk about that too.
Electric glide. Classic. Yeah, it's beautiful. There's a term called object fixation. As a motorcycle driver, you understand what that means.
Mm-hmm.
The bike will go at what you look at.
Yep.
So So if there's a dead animal on the road or something on the road, don't look at it, because there's like, you can't help but hit it at that point.
Yes.
And what you fixate on life is basically where you will go, right?
Yeah. Well, this film does such a good job of helping refine that focus and redirect that focus for people. I think when I watched it, I had the same kind of experience.
Okay, now you have to tell me something, Carl. At the end,
yes.
Did you tear up?
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of those moments where, you know, you realize, man, this is such a redemptive story. And that's why I said it's heartwarming, even though there are really poignant moments of loss and pain throughout the film. So
it's a personal goal for me to make men cry.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't have too much trouble with me. I sort of wear it on my sleeve that way. Let me ask you a couple questions about the film itself and how you made it. I mean, working with an Academy Award-winning actor like Louis Gossett Jr. I mean, what a great cast overall, though.
You want to talk about fear?
Yeah, right. No, I don't want to mess this up too badly, but
no. But I mean, that's the beautiful thing of this. Even in the process of making the movie, I overcame fears in my life.
Right? Really?
I'm this guy out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. I had made two films prior. I had developed a relationship with Jim Stovall, who was the author of The Ultimate Gift. And there's made from that. And Jim said, hey, I've got this book I wrote 15 years ago. And it was real thin. It was maybe only 50 pages. And he said, I think it's got a great story to it. Tell me what you think. So I read it. And I'm like, you know, this would be a cool movie, actually. And so Jim and I formed a partnership on this film. And we put our own money into it. We raised some money and we made this film. So, but then we're looking at the casting process, and I got with a casting agent out of LA, and the actors in this, Jason London, who was in his first movie was with Reese Witherspoon in Man on the Moon.
Yeah,
he's done numerous films, still active. Meredith Salinger, who plays his wife, was in The Journey of Natty Gann, and she's done several other things since then, which Escape from Witch Mountain with Disney. I mean, she's an accomplished actress. And then we, L. Scott Caldwell, if you're a Lost fan, she played Rose on Lost, but she plays the neighbor lady who takes care of the kids, right?
Right, yeah, she's great.
Great actress,
yeah.
Fantastic actress. And she's also a Tony Award-winning stage performer, you know, in her day. And then, even on the other side, then one of the messengers is Muse Watson, who's Mike Franks from NCIS. He's seen by 20 million viewers every week, you know.
Incredible cast.
Academy Award winning Lou Gossett Jr., who won the Academy Award for An Officer and a Gentleman. So I've got all these people showing up to Tulsa, Oklahoma to be in my movie, right? That will scare the poop out of you, quite honestly, you know, because these people are looking to me to tell them what to do to make this movie. Right. I remember one time, I'm in the midst of this process and I'm looking at myself and I'm going, what am I doing? What am I doing here? I don't know what I'm doing here. How did I get here? But that's where I had to come back to that point of, this is my dream. This is my desire to tell stories of quality that are going to change people's lives. Mm. I think that's the same thing for exploration.
I was going to say that fits our ethos exactly.
Yeah. You want to get things out to people that are going to have a positive effect on the world. That's what I love about the partnership with us, because we're walking in the same vein, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember it was one of the first days shooting on set, and we're in the middle of some scenes and things weren't going very well, and we had to stop shooting and I had to go recapture myself, and I had to literally talk myself off the ledge. And I called my wife, quite honestly. I'm like, honey, this is gone. My wife's a woman of faith. And she's like, you listen to me, Tracy Chose. This is, you're made to do this. This is who you are. I'm like, okay. I'll do it. You know, but we go back to set, and then the tide turned because I was willing to believe that I am that guy.
Amen.
Yeah. Cause what I was facing before that is, am I this guy? Yeah. Can I do this? I don't know if I can make this. When I was willing to say, yes, this is the man that God has made me to be. This is what I've been meant to do, so I'm going to do it. And it was a fantastic experience.
That is so cool to hear. And I love to hear that even as some people say that on the set, the director is all powerful. So even the all powerful director has those moments of great.
Hide behind the curtain.
Yes, exactly. Did you get a sense that, you know, you also work with a lot of child actors on this film. How is it working with them? Was there.
Honestly, my favorite. Quite honestly, because the children, well, as long as they're not brats, how's that? Children, actors, and people who haven't acted, you know, a long time professionally, they're hungry and they want to collaborate. To me, my favorite part of being a director is, can I get you to the point of giving a performance that you didn't even know you had?
Interesting. Right?
And it's like, I get great pleasure out of seeing my actors be the best they can possibly be. Right. And so a lot of times kids, you know, and people who are, I shouldn't say just kids, people who haven't had a lot of experience tend to not have the, as big of egos, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying my actors had that. My actors were all amazing. But there's a life and there's an energy that children bring. You know, a lot of people say, you know, working with animals and children. Well, in The Lamp, I had a dog. That was a big part of the story.
Right.
I had a baby in one of the scenes.
Oh, my goodness.
I worked with about 8 kids, you know. So, you know, hey, let's make your first movie with an Academy Award director. Let's just add all of that in.
Let's just put all the challenges right up front here.
Yeah. But, you know, that's, I think that's what makes the film enjoyable to watch, because you feel, even watching it through the screen, you feel a sense of that energy.
Yeah.
And there's hope in it. And I think as humans, we're drawn to that.
Well, you know, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, film has a way of bypassing our filters. And
yeah, there's a term called suspended disbelief.
Mm-hmm, right.
So if you can get your audience to a place where they're willing to suspend disbelief, then you can take them on a journey. Because, I mean, many movies you watch today, you know, there's no way that can actually happen, especially like the Die Hard movies and, you know, things where guys are falling 80 feet, land on their feet and run away and shoot people. We're willing, just for the adventure of it, we're willing to suspend our disbelief. And as a storyteller, if I can get an audience to that point where they're willing to jump in with me and join with me, mm-hmm. then you've done a good job telling that story.
Well, you know, you bring up storytelling. I'm interested in, how did you get involved in storytelling? What's your background? I mean, did you grow up in a family that was a film family or anything like that?
No, but for some reason, I can remember from a very young age in high school with some friends. Now, this is, I'm dating myself here. This is before camera phones and VHS. This is back in 8mm film. We would make little videos and splice them together and, you know, and do things like that. And there was, I've always, for some reason, been a storyteller. And for, I mean, as a young man, sometimes got me in trouble because I didn't tell true stories, right? But I don't know. There's something about it. Yeah, imagine, we'll go with that. I don't know what it is. It's just something about being able to capture somebody's attention, pull them along. Now, as I've gotten older, there's a purpose behind it. As a younger guy, I think it was for attention. You know, being the funny guy, being the comic, you know, and doing all that. But as I've gotten older, it's more about if I can tell a story that will have an effect on your life and change your life. I find great pleasure in that. I think that's honestly kind of my mission in life.
Yeah. Well, it's powerful. And stories throughout history have always been the means in which truth is communicated generationally and across community.
As a man of faith, I think that's what's important to me, because how is something proliferated through a people group? If you go to Bible days, Jesus sat at the gate and he talked with the elders. I think today, in today's world, well, originally when I first started, the gate was theater, but now I think that gate is our phone, our iPad, our computer, our TV. More information is disseminated through the internet than any other way.
Wow.
Right? And so if I want to reach a mass group or a mass, get a message to people, it's going to be today through technology. Yeah. You know, in Jesus' time, the gate was technology. The people, the elders would gather at night and they would sit and they would talk and they would disseminate information across the group. That group then would spread it to those who need to know throughout the city. Yeah. Today, by a click of a button, I can find anything I want to know about anything. And the interesting thing is I don't doubt it if it's on the internet, sadly.
I saw it on the internet. It must be true.
Yeah. So if I want to reach people and if I want to share information, through me, storytelling through some sort of video, visual medium is what's going to make it happen.
Yeah. Well, I think you're really right to bring up Jesus in this context. I mean, he's the greatest teacher the world has ever known. And how did he start most of his teaching? There was a certain man.
There was a farmer. Attorney.
He told a story. And
there was a fisherman. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and of
course.
But he
told stories they could relate to. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah.
Are the stories relatable to the audience?
Yeah.
You know, the audience can't set themselves in that. That's what I like about the films that I do. And it sounds like I'm bragging, but the situations are those that people can identify with. Because if I can tell you a story, but you can't relate to it, then it has no meaning to you. But if I can put you situation where you could visually see yourself in that situation or somebody that you know, all of a sudden you've got an attachment to it and it becomes real and valuable to you.
You know, and I think that's true of great storytelling, regardless of the film genre. I mean, if your stories are clear and they're set in suburban and other settings that we can readily identify with that way. But even I'm going to date myself a little bit. Even
when you look 29,
when Star Wars first came out, I remember I was a young teen. I'll give you that. So, but I remember, you know, engaging with people on this, and they said, "Well, this is just a Western. This is a drama that is."
Well, there's only really seven basic story types, right? And when you say types, I should say this, there are seven basic story types that people can relate to, that people, so if you approach your messaging in a style, there's like, you know, the overcomer, you know, I mean, I've got them all written down. I remember they're all off the top of my head, but rags to riches, you know, there's all these different types of stories. We have been accustomed to receiving information in these different forms. So if it's written in that way or presented in that way, you can grasp onto it and go with it, right?
Even
it's
if like your best friend is a 7 foot tall, you know, Wookiee, you can connect with the characters going through.
Well, it's kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy nowadays.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Each one of those characters represents a different type of person, even though one's a tree and one's a raccoon. We know somebody like those people, right?
Yeah, don't get me started on Groot. I can definitely, but I don't mean to digress on this, but it seems also, you know, that so many of the best stories that connect with our hearts are driven around the most important relationships in our lives, around families.
Sure. Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about how family in your films shapes the stories and shapes the storyline. Because, I mean, in The Lamp, this is the whole crucible for all of that to take place.
Yeah, I mean, we are social beings. We were created for community. We were created for interaction. I mean, the first point of reference is that is our own immediate family, and then it moves out to friends and colleagues and so on and so forth. When that part of our world is rocked, then your whole world starts to fall apart because that's the safe place for you, right? And as beings, you know, you've heard the term fight or flight. There are chemicals that are released in our brain. Now I'm getting into the neuroscience side of it, right? That reinforce behavior. And to build a storyline that is built around family is something that's very natural for a viewer, right? And so people identify with it. And if they can see that family restored, that brings a sense of peace and hope to themselves, right? To the viewer. So it's important. You notice in all of my films, somehow there's a family aspect to it. Usually it's relational. I mean, The Christmas Snow is a lot about a father-daughter relationship. Right. The Lamp is a husband-wife relationship. Another film I did called Find Me is a father-son relationship. And then one that's coming up here called Letting Go is a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, you know, burgeoning love interest. So, yeah, I guess to answer your question, family's at the heart of all stories, quite honestly. Even the ones Jesus told, you know.
Well, I can say the same thing too. You know, in my experience, the way in which so many of the truths of the gospel are portrayed to us are through the stories of families. You know, you have the prodigal son, you have the story.
Yeah, father-son relationship. You can identify with that as a father, right?
Exactly. And there are so many of those storylines.
Think about that. Do you have kids?
I do. I have four of them. Actually, my wife and I both have four of them. So we're
how many sons do you have?
I have one son, three daughters. Yeah.
So imagine your son comes to you one day and says, "Dad, I love you, and I know you have an inheritance for me, but I want it now." What would you think as a father? Because you're like, okay, I can give that to you, but it will be the very thing that destroys you. And can you love your son enough to let him find that out? I mean, as a father, I'd be like, "No, you're crazy. What are you talking about? This will kill you. I'm not going to let you go do that."
Yeah.
Yet, it's the same thing. The parable identifies us and God, where we're saying, "We want it all now. Give it to us now. I know more than you know." It's like, I love you enough to let you go figure that out. But the beautiful part of it, do you remember Benny Hester?
The song for sure. We are of the same age, bro. Yeah. I'm telling you, I remember Benny Hester.
There's a song called When God Ran, and that one still brings a tear to my eyes because even after the son did everything the father said you should not do, squandered everything he gave him, when the son came back and said, "I was wrong, will you forgive me?" You know, the dad gets the best clothes and gets the best food. I'm sorry, I'm kind of getting all for Clint.
Right.
But think about that. Yeah. You know, what kind of love would give everything and yet forgive when everything that was given was squandered?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that kind of story, just you can tell it touches me.
Yeah.
Because I've experienced that. Yeah. You know?
Well, you make me choke up too.
Didn't know this was going to be the sniffling old man podcast.
That's right. Well, it's funny.
What do you know how, to do, a couple old guys.
So. Oh, us young bucks, we go through life and we begin to see these moments of illumination. And that was a moment of illumination shared with me. That this is a God who would run towards us in the midst of our own willful and dysfunctional abandonment of everything that he's offered us. But
so tying that back to the movie, the messenger role played by Louis Gossett is basically the voice of God to this people, right? He doesn't represent God himself. He's not an angel. He's a person that delivers a message to this couple who needs relief from where their life is going. And all he says to them is, all things are possible if you're willing to believe they're all possible.
My message is this. You can have anything in life you want, including happiness and forgiveness, if you're willing to just believe.
And when they are willing to change their thought process and see things a little bit differently, I mean, they're given rules to the wishes being granted, right?
Mm-hmm.
They find out that, and I believe this is God's tools for us, that if we're willing to believe all things are possible to us. It's a mindset thing, right?
Yeah.
And that's what Jim's trying to get across with his original book, you know? So I don't know. I love the story because it's a redemptive story and it's a transformative story as well.
Well, and the best part of great stories, and include the lamp I would include in this, is that you bring something back to your own experience better, with more focus and more clarity. I mean, I'm always reminded of the C.S. Lewis quote that the power of stories is that they produce in our minds a world that is more real than the world that we live in. And it helps us refine and refocus our view of the world around us. So have you been able to take some of these lessons from stories that you've learned and make a difference and see the world in a different way that way?
For sure. I think one of my favorite things, and I don't know if you're familiar with the five love languages, but I'm a words of affirmation guy. I'll take.
You're doing great right now, Tracy. You're doing super well. This is very exciting.
Thank you. Make me tear up again. No. Okay, so two things. Making the movie is seeing people accomplish things that they just didn't even know they had. But I get emails and I get letters from people who say, you know, I watched your movie and because of that, I called my son, or I reunited with a family member, or I don't know if you know this, but like Christmas Snow, we turned into a live stage play and it was in Branson for a few years.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I would get people who would come see the play, buy the books, buy the movies, come back a days later to the theater and say, you know, I had one guy for sure. He was like 70s, in his mid 70s. He's like, my wife and I have been estranged from our children, our two sons, for about 15 years. After we saw your play, we bought the books and the movies and we sent it to them and we asked them to forgive us.
You know? Wow.
Yeah. So to answer your question, have I seen direct result? Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the greatest reward I could ever ask for versus, you know, any money or accolades or awards. It's that lives have been touched and lives have been changed through storytelling.
Through storytelling. Well, we're definitely going to get you back on for the Christmas Snows podcast.
Yeah.
That will be something to talk about as well. Because again, those stories are timeless. They're reaching into the heart of every person who watches and doing some sort of mystical alchemy with people's heart and to come away, come out of that theater or turn off the video and then see the world in a different way. I think it's a huge.
Yeah. And that's the goal. I mean, quite honestly, at the end of the movie, I hope people will say, wow, I never thought of it like that. Or, huh, that's interesting. You know, it's just getting the thought process going, right? Because all things begin with thought. Anything that we do, experience, or have, or buy, or sell, or anything, first was a thought at one time. And it can't be unless it's a thought, right? Go back to the word alchemy. Do you know the definition of the word alchemy?
I'm afraid I don't.
I love that word. Basically, it means to change from one thing to another. Like, people call, they associate, because there's some people who've been, because lead and gold are like one, I don't know if it's a molecule, but are one thing just short of each other.
Right.
Turn lead into gold for years, and they're called alchemists.
Mm-hmm.
Alchemy is just basically taking one thing and turning it into another thing.
Mm.
And I'm glad you chose that word, because that's truly what storytelling is taking one person's life and hopefully through this story, through this alchemist process, allowing them to be something completely different.
Sure. I thought you were having me go into the medieval history that I studied back in seminary.
Well, that's kind of where the term came from.
Right.
You know? It's because they were trying to turn lead into gold originally.
Right.
Thinking, you know, the thing is, if you could have an unlimited supply of gold, then the value would be nothing. If you think about it, they would ruin exactly what they're trying to do.
Very true. Very true. It's the very rareness of it that makes it valuable. Well,
that's what's beautiful about people. I mean, there's nobody out there like you who has your history, your experience, your thoughts, your anything. You are the rarest thing in the world. And when we begin to realize that, each one of us is the most valuable thing that walks the earth. You know, yet we're trying to be like everybody else. It's funny how that is.
Brother, as they said in my church, that'll preach right there.
That'll preach right there. Why try to be the mass when you could be the single, right?
Yeah.
We already are the single, right?
Well,
think about that. We celebrate things that are different. We celebrate things that are unique. We celebrate people who make change, yet we'll try to be and act like everybody else.
Well, I once saw a bumper sticker, and it was a feminist bumper sticker, but it was, well-behaved women never change the world. And that you could say, you eliminate the women part and just say, well-behaved
like people
rarely change the world. You know, we have to take
Rosa Parks does what she, yeah, she did what she was told to do, we wouldn't have had some of the revolution we've had in segregation. You
know? That's right. That's
right. Celebrate that.
You know, I think, again, I love linking good storytelling and good films to this kind of cultural and world-shaping outcomes. These are the ways that we miss sometimes. Sometimes we think of just entertainment and just putting our brains on the shelf. But what really good films do is, without burdening us, without creating a didactic sort of moment where we're going to teach you about this now, you get a chance to explore those very ideas in ways that are really transformative, really the kind of way that, again, Jesus would have done it if he had been a filmmaker in the 21st century.
You have to understand. Yeah, he'd be using social media.
he'd be having
one thing podcast. You have to realize, though, he would. Yeah. The What Would Jesus Do podcast. No, What Would I Do podcast. Very good. Something we have to understand is, every movie, every story that you see, every television show, everything that's out there has a message to it. And the whole purpose of telling stories is to deliver a message, right? So I think sometimes faith and family films get a bad rap because they're like, well, you're always preaching. Well, guess what? Every movie out there is preaching something.
Bingo. So, every good film is expressing a point of view on something.
I think every film.
Every film, right.
Bad ones.
And whether they do it or not, that's commentary on a lot of other technical aspects. But really, I think that's what motivates me to get involved with getting in touch with men and women like yourself who have put their stamp on these sorts of films and say, okay, what is the point of view? What is it that's coming out here? And how would you articulate it? Because I love to see the correspondence and hearing what you've said so far in the podcast about this film and about the way that you approach filmmaking in general. It really does have a strong correspondence to the experience that I personally had in seeing belief and seeing those things take shape, which I think is the mark of a good film. Some films that I've seen in the past, I leave the theater and I'm saying, did the director intend to make a comedy out of this? When in fact it was trying to be a drama. But this really, that correspondence tells me it's a really good film. Now, we've mentioned it a couple times. You're sort of you're like the Swiss Army knife of film and storytelling. What other projects are you currently working on? You mentioned you're speaking at a conference. What's going on? What's in Tracy Trost's life right now?
Well, it's, like you say, multifaceted. And again, the end goal is somehow to affect the world or people with positive change, right? So that can be done through many different ways. I would say my day job currently, I produce fundraising commercials for a lot of the major nonprofits that you may have seen. If you've seen the Shriners Hospitals for Children commercial, those are my commercials.
You talk about making me cry.
And that's the whole purpose, to motivate you, to engage you, connect with you, and motivate you to support these organizations. I do Shriners, the American Red Cross. I've worked with March of Dimes, Smile Train. I'm trying to think, there's like 14 or 15. Wow. American Legion, Disabled American Veterans. I've done some stuff with the Wounded Warrior Project and others. So the whole purpose with those commercials, again, is to get a message out there and hopefully get people to collaborate with these organizations. Now they collaborate through donating money on a monthly basis, but ultimately they're changing people's lives. And I've seen it firsthand. I mean, these organizations I work with, whether it's a cleft palate to helping a veteran get a job or the right kind of adaptive wheelchair or helping kids be able to walk or play basketball, I mean, it's transformative. So it's very rewarding work for me. It's storytelling. Again, you know, I got 2 minutes to tell a story to hopefully educate you and motivate you to want to take part. Right.
Yeah. That is an incredible job. I actually have a background in institutional development fundraising.
Oh, really?
I have way too many careers for me to even go into right now. So, but you're right. I mean, connecting on that level is so vital. And doing it in that short span of time where you get a very brief moment to touch someone's heart. You know, they said the hardest sermon to write is the sermon that's less than the time you have allotted, because you have to force your thoughts into a shorter and shorter time frame so that you really make the point.
Yeah, I've got about 40 seconds in the beginning of the commercial to somehow create an environment that draws you in, gets you emotionally connected. Doing these commercials, I think, has really, it's been 6 years I'm doing that now, has really refined my storytelling and visual skills. My team and I will work on writing them. I usually direct them. Most times I'll shoot them myself as well. I'm the guy behind the camera. So, and then on the edit process, many times I'll do the first cut on the edit and then I'll turn it over to my team, because they're way better at it than I am, quite honestly, to make it beautiful, make it flow, give it the right pacing, you know, the ebbs and the tides of the storytelling. But it's forced me to refine my skills, because I don't have 90 minutes to get my point across. I've got 40 seconds. And it's been great. It's been very challenging.
Set yourself a challenge, why don't you? There you go.
Yeah. Exactly. And then on the speaking side, so in my process of learning how to connect with an audience, I've actually gotten into the neuroscience of all this, and meaning, why do people do what people do? Why do you react the way that you react? Understanding conditioning and triggering and the chemicals of the brain and all that. Because when you're creating a spot, a television spot, that is going to ask people to commit to giving $19 a month to an organization, I have to connect with you on a deeper level than just asking you for money. Mm-hmm. I have to make you feel like you're making a difference in the world. I have to show you that the money that you're giving is changing lives, and truly understand that it's true and you can believe it. Because after a few months, you're going to get tired of it and go, I don't want to keep giving money to this. But if I can get you to the point of collaboration so that you feel like when your actions are a huge part of this and are necessary for this to happen. So, I mean, we even developed what it's called a neuroscience lab.
Really?
And I'll hook people, when I make a commercial, I'll hook people up to a galvanic skin response, to an oxytocin release, to an EEG. I track their eyes when they're watching the commercial, and I'll actually put my group of my potential donors, their demographic, in a one by one watching these commercials, and I can see where I'm losing them. I can see where I'm connected to them. I can see, and I'll re-edit sometimes or rewrite based on that. So I've really gotten into the science behind, I call it the science behind the art of fundraising, or the science behind the art of storytelling.
Wow.
And so because of that, I've learned a lot about people, and I've learned a lot about why we do what we do, understanding conditioning, understanding implicit belief, and how when you have an understanding in this, there's a way that you can retrain your brain. My favorite scripture, my life scripture, I would say, is Romans 12:2. Mm-hmm. You know, be not conformed to the patterns or the ways of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
Yes.
I believe that God has given us a toolbox.
Yes.
And if I can renew my mind, basically when I say renew my mind, change the way I see things, change the way I believe about something, beliefs that were usually built by the time I was 7 years old. So think of a kid who grows up in a house that's dysfunctional, maybe divorced parents or drug abuse or something like that. That kid is taking those beliefs into the future. Now, he may not be a drug addict, but he has the beliefs of one. Mm-hmm. Until he renews his mind and believes something new, his life will always follow that pattern. So God has given us the ability to take and change our lives through the renewing of our mind.
Yeah.
So I teach about how do you do these things. If you want, we can do a podcast just about that.
Well, we may do that. I would say that there's incredible.
If you apply these to your life, you can change your life.
Wow. And it's the scripture that says, as someone thinks in their heart, so they are. I mean,
so is he? Yes.
And, you know, we also recognize with the brain chemistry, the release of chemicals, even in a nursing mother with the brain chemicals that bond.
Oxytocin.
Yeah, that bond to one another.
Mirror neurons. That's how you learn language. You learn, like you can say, I can tell that's Tracy's kid because he acts just like him or whatever, because that kid is mirror neurons have kicked in to mimic me, you know, or family because it's safe. You got to remember your primal brain always wants to be safe. It's about survival.
Wow.
And the sad part about that is safety isn't always what's best for you, meaning you have a person who grew up in an abusive relationship. Statistically, usually 80, 90% of those people will grow on to be, unless they renew their mind, will go on and marry into or enter into another abusive relationship. Not because they want to be abused, but it's because it's what they know.
It's familiar.
And it's what's safe.
It's safe.
And so your brain needs chemicals to support these actions, even though those actions are the worst thing for you.
Why?
Right? That's because the brain still believes what that person's learned as a child. Until that person can renew their mind and learn something new, the chemicals are going to support the bad action. But as soon as they can learn something new, then the chemicals will support the new action. That's just the retraining of the brain.
It's incredible. And all of this from someone I just wanted to talk about a movie.
A movie. You had no idea. Yeah, I'll send you a bill. This is like a psychiatrist. You want to talk about your deepest
thoughts? I'm getting personal coaching while we're on the podcast. Well,
I would love to do a podcast just about the understanding of the brain and why we do what we do and how to retrain your brain.
Everybody listening, you can stay tuned for that one. We're going to do that one on another time. But you also have a podcast, don't you, Tracy?
I do. It's one that I produced years ago. I haven't kept it up to date, but there's still 50 episodes there if you'd like to go to it. And it's called The Successful Life Mindset. Successful Life Mindset. Just go to successfullifemindset.com. You'll see a picture of my probably 10 years ago face, a little bit younger looking. There's 50 episodes on there. And the first 25 episodes I did with a friend of mine called, his name is Cliff Ravenscraft. Otherwise known as the podcast answer man. And then the second 25 I did on my own.
Wow. That's great. Well, we'll definitely check that out. And I want to thank you for taking the time today to meet with us and to really open up more than this film, The Lamp, more than just what it's like to be an award-winning director and someone who's contributed to those things, but so many of the other things that you've been able to motivate and encourage and touch people. It's a privilege to talk with you and a great pleasure to be with you.
Thanks, Carl. It's quite honestly, it's my honor. I'm just a huge fan of exploration films and glad to be in that family. So anything I can do to get the word out and be a part of this, I'm more than happy to help.
Well, again, I want to thank you and I want to thank everyone listening to this episode. At Exploration Films, we understand you could be listening to any other podcast out there, but you chose to invest your time with us. We thank you. Please let us know what you think about this show at explorationfilms.com. And we value your feedback. Continue the conversation by subscribing to our podcast on whichever podcast app you're listening to. And visit explorationfilms.com for more. And if you sign up for our email list, we have a free gift for you when you join us in this adventure. Thanks for listening.
That's a wrap. You've been listening to the Exploration Films podcast. Explorationfilms.com.